podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap on a Tuesday. It's Neil Atkinson. If you can download the app and enjoy all the content that's on there after Liverpool beat Leeds United by 6-1 at Elland Road, that'd be great. Subscribe as well whilst you're there. Go the full hit. Why pull our punches? I am joined right now by Adam Smith, by Paul Cope and by Dan Austin to talk about the fact that Liverpool didn't pull their punches, Dan. They love a goal glut. I mean, I'd be up for them having scored 3-2 against teams that currently sit in the bottom half, but that's not Liverpool's way this season. They would much rather get 6 out the way all in one go. They go from no goals against the bottom half side to 6 against the bottom half side. But first, I want to sort of say I thought the first 30 were almost as pleasing, obviously in hindsight to a degree, as what you get after the fact, because I think for amongst the first times this season at a ground like Elland Road, Liverpool get through 30 minutes with nothing daft and with a fair amount of calmness and a fair amount of control.
Yeah, very little happened. There was the free kick from which Rodrigo had a header and he probably should have done better with.
And he probably was offside, but it wasn't clear.
It wasn't given in the ground, I don't think, and then there's no need to look at it. So that was the only thing where you felt anything, I would say. There was little thrill and there was little peril, and that was fine, given that in an awful lot of these games Liverpool have played in, i.e. I was a Forest, plenty of the other ones, Bournemouth, they've conceded in either the first half or the start of the second. And it just felt awful from then on. So the fact that they were able to do the sensible stuff early, and then once they felt like they'd settled the crowd down and kind of taken any early belief that Leeds may have had about themselves away, then they were able to relax a little bit and play their own stuff higher up the pitch. And that felt like it made a significant difference to them psychologically, really, more than anything. I'm sure that, you know, they were capable of playing that well against Bournemouth and they were capable of playing that well against Nottingham Forest. But this time they just seemed like they were doing things differently in their own minds more than anything.
Well, I mean, just the idea of, again, it's an unfashionable virtue, but it's a virtue that Liverpool sides under this manager have had, that Manchester City sides have, that, you know, you see good sides have. I saw some of Manchester United, the Forest, I didn't think they were even that controlled. But there is a virtue to playing your way in. And it is a virtue that Liverpool have really not had at times this season, especially away from home. And there, I just thought, against Leeds, you know, they score early against Villa, they score early against Newcastle, they score relatively early against Tottenham. This one, they don't do any of those things. Yeah. They just play the way in. And they've been the best ones. This one, they play the way in and then the game goes the way it goes.
I think the key thing to that as well, I mean, I've not seen any statistic on this, so it may not be true, but it felt like it in the ground. The ball was in play almost all the time, and even when Liverpool felt like they were getting towards the edge of the penalty area and loads of people in the way, and for example were crying for the ball to be put in a box or the shot to be taken or whatever,
the fella next to me yeah, in the ground, this is no word of a lie, and if you listen to that sound, because we had a nice chat, and in the end the fella next to me in the ground was absolutely obsessed he should be shooting from the halfway line, like it was only talked about for the first 15, because Meslier does take a really high position off his line, to be fair, so he was like, so if you take one you'll force him back.
I thought you were exaggerating, this
wasn't like a joke, this was like shoot from the centre circle, like they should have a shot there, Van Dijk should shoot now, but he wouldn't leave it alone. As I say, he was a nice fella and he just was desperate for Liverpool to win, but he just would not get off this idea of do that, and there was that bit of that the way into times.
They did the exact opposite,
yeah.
i.e. sometimes they were in the box 10 yards from goal and it would get shifted back out and go left to right again, but it was the right thing to do because it gave them no rest. In a physical sense, i.e. you get to waste 30 seconds or 45 when you're taking a goal kick, for example. But also from a mental point of view for them, they've always got to be concentrating on, right, the ball's getting moved to the right again, we've all got to shuffle across, we've all got to hold the line, where's Alexander-Arnold gone, who's on hit, all that sort of stuff. And I think that just made the game easier for Liverpool as it went on, and that's something that in previous equivalent fixtures against sides lower down the table, I don't think they've done. I think they've relatively early on, from an attacking point of view, looked quite panicked, i.e. we really need to score the first goal here, so let's try and force it. And last night they didn't. They were really patient, waited for the right time to pick through balls and stuff like that. And it just worked out an awful lot better. And I'm glad that they've got to that point mentally where they just seem to have, in this game at least, let's see if it continues, but they just relaxed and knew that they had to win and stuff, but they weren't. It didn't feel like they were absolutely desperate for it from the first minute, and that if anything went wrong, oh, well, that's that gone then.
The explosion, when it does come, though, Paul, again, for me, it's back to picking your moments. You're quiet in the crowd, you've got through the awkward stuff, you've played your way in, and then there is just an opportunity. And it's a slightly fortuitous opportunity, because for me, for all the world, when I went down at half-time and saw it on the cameras and post, it does just look like handball that comes off his hand, and he's But they explode into that. They explode into making it two quite quickly. You see the same thing after the, you know, there's the mistake we'll come on to, but it goes three and then they explode into making it four, going from one end of the pitch from the other. The idea of them being able to be both controlled and explosive is something that I think has been missing this season. I think they're being able to be one or the other at times. I think the United 6-7-0, sorry, the six goals in the second half, to me just feels like one continuous explosion on the one hand. But the idea of them being able to show across 90 minutes that they can be controlled, but they can also be explosive was great to see. And when the explosion comes, it is excellent football.
Yeah, I think there's loads in it because it goes back into the usual thing of there's lots of moving parts in football, and a lot of the time we don't want to look at those moving parts because we like to focus on certain dramatic things. But even in, Joe, when you're talking about the first half being composed and calm, it's only composed and calm because we then had the explosion and scored six goals. If we have that first half an hour and then go on to lose the game or draw the game, that isn't a composed and calm first half hour. That isn't how, when you're watching the game and you're watching people on Twitter at home talking about it, that's not how people are describing it as you're watching it. No one's there going, oh, this is just composed and calm by Liverpool. Everyone's saying this is just slow and we're not doing anything and we're not forcing it enough. And the other side of that, which I mean, if you look at it from the other side, if you're a Leeds fan, I think you're absolutely furious with your team. You've got Liverpool on a Monday night at home. This is a Liverpool team that even Carragher on TV is saying struggles with intensity, with the other side playing with intensity, and they don't come at us with anything. To enable us to be that sort of slow and controlled in the first half hour is a sin, as far as I'm concerned, for them, but I couldn't care less about them. And then you've got the first goal. We get a lucky break. And that's something that hasn't happened a lot this year. A lot's gone against us this year. A lot of times that handball will be given against us. So you get that. But then off the back of that, I think something that a really big positive from the last two games, which we haven't seen this season at all until the last two games, I don't think, is we haven't crumbled when we've had things go against us. So when we went 2-0 down against Arsenal, there was that moment where we're all like, oh my God, this could be... You know, this could be a 5-6 that could humiliate us. But we pick ourselves up and we bounce back. The mentality was the same last night. When they get their one back immediately after half time, there's that little feeling of, oh, and that's when I'm most impressed with them. That they do the no, we are just gonna go into an exploding moment here and use a shite, by the way. Like that helps when the other side is absolutely shite. And when your players sniff it and they're like, no, we can. And then it was impressive. I think the big thing then was there were a few moments where we looked and felt like Liverpool for us and for them. Do they look at us and think, I always lose track of which goals are which in this, but the break where Andy Robertson, like
the fourth,
is that the fourth? That just epitomises it for me. That's where we're all looking at each other going, oh, this is Liverpool. Remember Liverpool? And Leeds like, oh shit, yeah, I remember Liverpool.
But on that, Paul, one of the ways in which, you know, there's different ways you get yourselves off the hook or get your teammates off the hook. Konate makes the mistake. It goes the way in which it goes. They score. But this is where, like, having a two-goal advantage at that moment helps. And that's where at times this season it's felt as though no one's helped anyone. You know, there's been, especially on the road and especially in these sorts of games, Dan before mentions the Forest game, Liverpool have a few chances in the, you know, in the opposition penalty area when that game's at 0-0. At Bournemouth, there's chances. Nunez is one-on-one at Brentford. And I've always had a bit of sympathy for the idea that if you're the defence, you'd be like, lads, you could just take the pressure off us a little bit here by sticking it in the back of the net. In this instance, they have. So it goes 2-1, but it doesn't go 1-1. It doesn't go 0-1. And I think that is, you know, the extent to which that just makes playing football so much easier. And it's like, and then they dig them out again by going and making the 3-1 pretty quickly and being then on top. But I think at times remembering the Salah goal to make it 2-0 is a critical goal, because what it does is it means Liverpool have actually given themselves, I think for the first time this season on the road, they've given themselves actual breathing space, and that does not make playing football easier.
Yeah, but there's deep psychology in that as well, because that second goal is a perfect example of Jota drops deep, wins the ball back, we break. It doesn't even look like there's... Even as they're breaking, you're looking at it thinking, where's the pass here? Where's the goal? I'm not sure where it comes from. Salah makes what's an all right run to the side. Jota slips him in. Even at that point, watching at home, I'm thinking, wonder what happens from here. And again, if I'm a Leeds fan, I'm furious with the goalie, by the way.
I mean, he went, kick it there.
Yeah, like, I'll just leave that big gap there for you, mate. Can you put it there? I don't know who you are. I'm not there with you. And you know, Mo Salah goes, yeah, of course I can. But I think if you're the rest of the team watching that, You're like, oh, that's Mo Salah. That's Diogo Jota. That's fine. Like, we're back to this now. We get that chance and we score a goal. There's been too much this season, even missed penalties. Like, literally to that point. And I think there's been a few moments this season where Klopp and even I saw Henderson post-match interview sometimes. They've almost wanted to say, it's not as bad as you think, you know. Like, if we'd have just slotted that pen, we'd have won this game. And we've had games like this loads in the past where we weren't that good, but we just won and you just forgot about it. But because we're missing the chances and we're missing the pens, and it just all
skews
everything.
Because the editors are getting punished for them.
Exactly. That was massive for me. And I think for everyone in the team then, they get to look at it and go, we can all relax a little bit more.
It's stood up against Adam, one of the most physically intense in terms of all the underlying numbers around pressures, around passes per defensive action. Before the game, Leeds United were leading the way. There's something that happens within the match where I think there's a tactical aspect, don't get me wrong, and I think also nothing saps energy like conceding goals. But it was a second game on the bounce where on 65 minutes, I was looking at Liverpool and I was looking at the opposition and I was feeling Liverpool are in much better nick than these here physically at this point in this game. Felt the same against Arsenal. There's been so many games this season where I felt that situation is quite the opposite. So it's worth remarking upon here. I think in part of this is Liverpool are tactically unconventional. They're keeping the ball away from areas where Leeds want to go and press, where they want to show that aggression, that intensity. And that obviously helps. And they're sort of half tempting then. You've got to sprint and you've got to move and Liverpool are doing all of that. But just in general, I just thought Liverpool looked fitter, stronger, sharper, bigger. And that made a difference too.
It's interesting because I think it's generally we all acknowledging up to and including the manager that he got pre-season wrong and that he maybe misused the World Cup break as well. But what he'll have had in his mind was this sort of period of time, because in his mind, we'd still be in the Champions League right now. We'd, you know, maybe be more towards the top end of the table than we are. So the team is almost primed for right now without any of the pressures that would normally be there right now. So certainly when you look at Arsenal, well, they've been playing Europa League and they've had the stresses and strains of the title race going on. I'm almost not surprised with that. With Leeds, I think that there's two things. I think one, as you say, yes, they're all of those things in terms of how much effort they put into matches, which is a kind of hangover from Bielsa. That's how he drilled them to run that much and you know, most of them will still have that in them. But it's also, it becomes a lot harder to run when you've lost the game. And at 2-1, they'll have had a little thing where maybe if it had stayed 2-1 for a little while, they would maybe have kept that pressure on. As soon as it goes 3-1, that's it. They're done. And I think as soon as you are...
They had a bit of a five-minute patch, I thought, after 3-1, where they thought, if we make this mad, you never know.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Liverpool go, you think you're going to make this mad, we're just taking this away from you, we were looking after the ball, we're doing this, you sort of saw them wilt before your very eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, like... We have all in lives experienced that thing where you are mentally shattered and it affects how you feel physically. It just does. And so I'm not shocked that a team that maybe felt like they were back in the game and then all of a sudden they weren't back in the game and then they kind of thought we can still get back in this and then it was 4-1. They're just going, nah. And also there will be a little bit of them that are like, there are more important tests to come that we need to save ourselves for. So I do agree with you. I think it's a combination of all of those factors.
Absolutely.
I think we were primed for this to be a really important part of the season for us. And unfortunately it hasn't been in terms of the other competitions, but they're still going to have that physical peak within them.
And within that, there's the tactical shifts and bits that are unconventional, Adam. The first one is Trent Alexander-Arnold, but it does lead you to other things that are therefore different as to how Liverpool play, because what he is doing is so different. He is nominally right back, and I think it's important to remember that when Liverpool lose the ball for anything that goes longer than the first press, he gets himself back into right back over and over again. But he ends up all over the pitch. I mean, Liverpool basically end up playing as something that looks like a 3-2-5 with him very, very firmly in the two. And the trick is that he's just going to be constantly available. And once he's constantly available, he can help everybody else out. And the other thing about him being constantly available is that he's also obviously brilliant when he does get the football under control, and it was a masterclass in the end.
It was, and I think it's a kind of this hybrid position that I think, to be fair, I think Guardiola's come up with that we've copied.
Brighton do it when we go to Brighton in the season. Gross does it as well. And you've seen a couple of Brighton players do it over the course of this. I think there's a number of sides who've been, Zinchenko's been doing it for Arsenal. It's been going around this sort of thing. It's just the first time we've seen it.
Yeah. What it does, I think, is it mitigates his weaknesses in a lot of ways. Like, I don't think he's anywhere near as bad defensively as some people make out. And it's absolutely wild the extent of coverage that he gets compared to the likes of Reece James or what have you when it comes to his defensive duties. But he's still, he is far more interesting, exciting and valuable as an attacking player than he is as a defensive one. So this kind of lets him do that roving thing where he can be all over the pitch and be in several different areas and offer something that it's like you're sort of saying to Kevin De Bruyne, you just go where you fancy, where you think you can do the most damage. Like that's what, you know, De Bruyne's the only one who's got better numbers than him. You know, like Carrick said in the post-match stuff, he was saying, I don't care where Trent Alexander-Arnold's position is on the team sheet. I don't care what you say, whether you're saying he's in midfield, he's right back, whatever. I want him here. And he was basically saying the kind of third of the pitch on the right-hand side that's not quite in the attack and not quite in the defence, from there over to the centre circle, if you like, that's as a kind of rectangle. He was like, that's where he needs to be to do the most damage, and that's where he was doing the most damage. And it's making it very difficult for teams to know exactly how to cope with that and to counter it. And we might see teams start to counter it a little bit better now that they can expect it a little bit more. But also, it's no coincidence that it worked so well after we've had a week on the training pitch with, you know, and a week where like everyone just looked better because they haven't had a game in midweek. They've had more than a week off. They just looked fresher, brighter, stronger. It looked really good, really exciting.
There's been times this season, Paul, when you've seen Liverpool's structure and Liverpool's approach, and I've been a bit like, who's this meant to get the best out of? Who's our footballer here we're trying to get the best out of? I've got my favourite Liverpool footballers. I've got the ones who I think are the very best ones. Obviously, your favourite should always be the 11 who are on the pitch at any given time. But there's always ones you're able to say, you know, there is the old line about carrying the piano and all that sort of stuff. And who's meant to be. And at times I've been watching this season going, who do we think's playing the piano today? The thing about yesterday, and Trent Alexander-Arnold is example number one, to be clear, but there's a lot to be said for building a team that gets the best out of your best players. And that is, for me, the major takeaway from what you've seen against Arsenal, especially from the 40-minute mark onwards, and now what you've seen against Leeds. Liverpool's system gets the best out of their best players. The first one is Trent Alexander-Arnold, because there's something to be said that if you're getting the best out of him, he can help you get the best out of the next two, three, four, all the way down the line. And seeing that, to me, the system getting the best out of the best players is the thing that I just want to see week in, week out more than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I've realised over the past week I'm developing an obsession and a bee in my bonnet about Trent now. And I might even start a campaign. And you can do that thing with petition for government. Is it you need 100,000 signatures to get it debated in Parliament?
Yeah, you've got to go through
it. I might just do that as well. Just get all them knobheads to debate it as well and see what they've got to say about it. But because I'm with Adam completely, I'm with you on this, but Joe, to take that analogy further, the problem we've got with all of this, and I heard Carragher say that thing about don't care where he is on the team sheet as long as he's... I'm like, no, that's nonsense, Jamie, because Kevin De Bruyne gets to play in those areas of the pitch, but he never has to go and play right back. He gets to play the piano, but he never has to carry it. Never. Like, he has to do his bits in midfield. He has to do his bits. But the fact that this lad has to still go back from midfield and do right back sometimes, for me, is just crazy. Especially if you tie it into the Bellingham thing. If we're not going to buy Bellingham, we keep using this phrase about Jude Bellingham and generational talent. I think everyone agrees on that. Well, I tell you what, we've already got a generational talent and he's won everything there is to win. So if you put Jude Bellingham and Trent Alexander-Arnold side by side for their careers to date, who smashed it more? Trent. He's won everything and he's done it in a position. It's weird, this thing about the right back versus midfield. And don't get me wrong, I've probably been in the past saying, yeah, maybe he could just become the greatest right back on the planet. I think we've all seen enough now to know that he doesn't probably want to. Like, if you said to him, where do you want to play, mate? He'd say, I'd want to play in the position I always played in before I was converted to this position to get into the side. I think everyone's forgetting this, that, like, he only got converted to right back because they sat down, Joe Alex Inglethorpe, and said, that's the best way into the team. Well, we can forget that now. It's cheaper. If you were looking at it in, like, cold, hard numbers and doing the best players, getting the best out of them, all the rest of it, and then recruitment costs, to buy another Trent to play in midfield is going to cost you £150 million. To buy a lad to play right back, to do the bit you want to do, to be behind someone like Trent, costs you well less than that. Andy Robertson cost us £8 million, and look what we've turned him into. So for me, all of the things I'm with you both with completely, and I think now that we've seen this, there should be a push to build this around Trent going forward. Because in the past, earlier in the season, I was saying, you know, it's crazy we're not building it around Mo. But Mo is at the, you know, he's going into the twilight of his career now, the last years. This side and this squad could be built around Trent for 10 years here.
When you're in an away end, you don't see like every kick of the ball. You might be talking to like whoever's next to you, or someone's letting on to you, or just distracted by whatever. And every time I wasn't looking at the match and then look back at it, there were 22 men on the pitch at any given moment. And every time I look back on the pitch, Alexander Arnold's had the ball, it felt like.
Or he was just about to get it.
Just available all the time. And what I thought was really interesting was the first goal and the sixth goal. So he gets an assist for both of them. But the first one is a right-back's assist, and the last one is a centre-mid's assist in terms of the way he moves up the pitch in there, where he stood, and the type of pass that he plays. And I think it was really interesting to see that he did both in the same game, whilst, as you were saying, also getting on the cover and stuff like that. I think also, I haven't actually seen their goal back, but I think that might have been one of the very early days flaws of it, in the Konaté hasn't got the ball that normally he thinks he's got. Normally he's got a pass to his right that's really easy, he knocks it 5 yards, and I think he might have gone, shit, he's not there, I forgot for a moment, and suddenly someone's on top of him. But that's the kind of teething issue that they'll get over if he's going to be doing this kind of hybrid thing of both at the same time. One of the things that I was, you were talking about the impact on everybody else, one of the things that I was sort of wondering whether it would get the best out of some other people was Salah. And I was thinking it in like the first 15 or 20 last night, because he's more narrow, and because Robertson's getting forward less, still to an extent, but definitely less, it means that the wide forwards have got to stay wider than I think they would have been, say, like 2 or 3 years ago when Liverpool were brilliant. And I like it when Mohamed Salah's near the goal, but he then scored two. He scored against Arsenal. He should have scored a penalty. He should have scored again, or could have scored again if it wasn't for a brilliant save at the end. I think he had the most shots he's ever had in a Premier League game against Arsenal. I think maybe the most touches ever as well.
In the box, I think.
Touches in the box. So clearly that, so far at least, isn't the case. And I think if that's something that can all suit them, then it's not just about, oh, well, what are we doing with this one player? It means that everybody else's job in front changes quite significantly, but so far is all right. Although I do think that there may be games where you look at it and think, my God, those two that are playing left and right wing are nowhere near the goal, just because it's hard for them to do it. Maybe when they're playing against a better side, another Arsenal, a better side, but maybe one that's less panicked and got less pressure on it. But the change that it impacted on the front three, even though it's still three players, and it's still three players that you know, have played a lot for Liverpool in the past with, a relatively new one down the middle, but who's done that role to a fair extent so far. I thought they were all doing very, very different things in a really short amount of time. And for them to have understood it, first of all, so quickly is really, really good. But that was actually the sort of bigger change for me last night anyway, because it was less to do with what Liverpool were doing at right-back, because frankly, they had very little to do at right-back. Leeds offered absolutely nothing from an attacking point of view, really. But those players in the front three were all really effective, and loads of the, you know, individual skills and techniques that they've got were on display, but in a different way, because they were being asked to occupy from the start of moves at the very least a different area of the pitch.
For me, this is why, Paul, I'm not that bothered. You are, seemingly. I'm not that bothered by whether or not he's normally a right back or a centre mid. And the reason why is, as mentioned there with Salah as well, it's about arriving into the space that's there. It's not about where you're meant to be starting. It's about where you're arriving. It's about where the football happens. And that's why I was making the argument a few weeks back, and I still would make it, and you get to see bits of it yesterday, obviously, about the idea of him, what he could or couldn't do around number 6/double pivot, and it's 3-2-5 with the ball from a Liverpool point of view, although we'll come on to Robertson in a minute, and Trent's very much one of the two. But I feel as though almost, if one of them was the takeaways from this season, watching a lot of these other sides have been very impressive at times tactically, and I'd even be prepared to, like, for instance, lash Bournemouth into that from time to time, is we've got to allow, I think, that there is greater flexibility, more unorthodox football possibly than there's ever been. And where, you know, we've been a bit of a catalyst for that in terms of people trying to work out how to deal with what we do, what we used to do with midfielders was really unorthodox, the way in which they built a certain platform. I think I almost feel a little bit like I'm almost concerned about naming it. Just sort of know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't want to say this is a thing.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, I don't want to necessarily say, and this is a way in which you get someone, you know, go and get someone else who plays right back. Because what you might find is, I thought it was really interesting how much Henderson was almost just creating space and getting out the way. Mm. The idea that someone else behind him or around him could just create a problem. He might want to go and do 10 minutes as an orthodox right back because that gives the opposition another problem. Just sort of know what I almost worry that we don't need to necessarily right now point at it and go, just centre mid forever then. It gets to be something that is a hybrid, that is unorthodox. And I feel as though unorthodoxy could really help this Liverpool team, because I think unorthodoxy has actually helped Liverpool get massive success before. And when you've got players who are this good, then I think they're the ones who are best at being the unorthodox footballers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And it's funny, because even as I'm saying, everything I'm doing before, inside my brain, there's already an argument going on. Do you know what I mean?
It's a great debate in Parliament.
It's a great debate inside my head. So, the funny thing is, as soon as I said before, Joe, buy a right back, well, I could imagine Klopp and Pebble in the city going, that's not how it works, is it, mate? Because if he's playing at a two, we can't. If we have a right back there, that's an extra lad.
We've just lost the football.
We're not allowed to have 12.
Pass to.
That's not how it works. Like, the reason it works like this is we're overloading the middle of the park by having a lad come in from right back. That's what all those teams you've mentioned who already do this, that's what they do. So I'm with you on that. And actually, what I've been thinking is, and this is more like Guardiola, I don't know how everybody else does it, but for me, it's more like horses for courses then. Like, Joe, if you're playing a team like Leeds, then he can nominally, when you're right. And I think we've talked about this for years now. It was Slaven Bilic said at first, like, you're all too obsessed with, like, the numbers on the paper and the shape we say it is. Because it,
the graphic at the start.
Yeah. Because I think if you said to, I mean, we've said this for a long time, haven't we? It says 4-3-3 at the beginning on the telly on Sky. Well, nothing agrees with it being 4-3-3, nothing. Like, the way what you're watching with your own eyes, the average positions, none of it does. So the fact that, like, he's nominally a right back is probably nonsense anyway. But I think the evolution of this is, yeah, when you're playing a team where you're going to dominate the ball the whole time and he doesn't have to worry too much about it, I'm not that bothered about him having to drop into that nominal position every now and then. My concern is, you know, when he's up against the Martinelli, you're just always going to have people going, but he's shit at defending at right back, isn't he? And you're like, but lads, and I'm with Adam, what he said before. One, he's not as bad a defender and he just gets highlighted well more than all these other fullbacks do. But the other thing, and this was apparent last night and against Arsenal, when we talk about defending, what people tend to mean, I think, when they say defending, is defending backwards, not defending forwards, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Trent Alexander-Arnold is an unbelievable front foot defender. He is brilliant at pressing forward, brilliant. And I think this comes down to what, Joe, the thing that's naturally inside you as humans and footballers. Some people are more defensively minded, some people are more attacking minded. For him to become a right back, he had to become more of a defender. But his whole career as a footballer from when he was, I was meant to look this up, but like, I'm guessing he joined the academy at 4 years of age. And then did he break into the team at 19? So all those years, he was front foot, going forward, always thinking about attacking, with a nominal defensive role. And then he converted to being a right back where he's got to think about defending backwards. They're the bits where he tends to be sloppy because he has to focus more to do that. In the same way that the defenders who are brilliant naturally at defending have to focus more to do the other bit. And that's where I think if you can get him into that role more where he's forward facing and forward focused, then the more you can do that, the better. And I think it's just a case of going forward, picking your games for it.
Other thing to point out, since he'd been doing this, using John Stones off as a nominal right back, but then comes in support to Rodri, there's been bits of that. They've been doing that on and off for years. It's interesting that the City managers felt that Kyle Walker can't do it and said that publicly. When they do it, they use Ake, left-hand side, more often than not, left back. But when Brighton do it, they use Stupinian. Have I pronounced that right? You're good at pronunciations.
It was decent.
Thank you very much indeed. And he's been sort of, he gets up and down like no one's business for Brighton. One of the things that struck, Nathan Ake doesn't do that and you wouldn't expect him to. As Paul says, he thinks about the game differently, has a different mentality. It struck me that Robertson was closer to the Brighton model. You know, Robertson's where he is around the fourth goal because he sees the opportunity, he backs himself to go, he's got unbelievable pace and he's not a centre-half playing left-hand side. And again, it's not always going to sort of correspond this. There is a horses for courses element, but it's just striking to me that Liverpool were still also happy to at times end up throwing the dice and saying, well, the centre-halves are going to be 2v2 and we're going to back the framework that's in front of them. We've done that before as well. And I think that for me, Robertson still needs to have that licence because, if not, precisely why is he playing? But he did have it last night, and you get to see him have it against Arsenal as well. You know, it's not an absolute copy of what other teams are doing this. Liverpool are still tweaking it their way.
Yeah, and as I said before, I think it's no surprise that Robertson had one of his best games for a while after he's had a week off. But in fact, did he play? He did play, didn't he, against... yeah, of course. But he didn't play the match before that, did he? He came on at the end. So he has had a lot of rest.
Yeah.
Where he has
after
not had
after playing two
that,
games for Scotland
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, exactly. Where he's not had that over the course of the season. Because none of us have, because there's been a game every other day or whatever it is. And so he's got, right now, he's got the legs to be able to do that, running up and down full pelt on the wing, which is great. And it's going to be, again, to say what Paul said before, the horses for courses thing, it is going to be interesting to see how they tweak it next season, or even the remainder of this season. If there's times when he's shattered, are they just going to say, just stay, you know, just you can just drop back a little bit, you don't need to do it as much as you have been doing it, you know, or you did in Leeds? Also, let's be honest, we're going to play teams that are better than Leeds between now and the end of the season. That's going to make a difference to how it works, because they were shite, and you know, you have to sort of couch everything that gets said with that in mind. Yeah. You have to remember it. They weren't good.
And they also didn't have a plan for what Liverpool were doing. You see what I mean? They didn't go, well, this is where the spaces will be. If they tried this little clever thing to do it here, and they're putting Robertson there, then the space there, you'll exploit that. The space here, you exploit that. You know, they didn't have the playbook because they've not had the opportunity to get one.
No, exactly. My lead supporting mate, Nick, was saying that in his Javi Gracia, is it, has done is made them more solid. Like, that's been he's built it off a solid base, really. Well, that fell apart really, you know, pretty much before the first half was over. So that also means any plans have gone out the window. And then yeah, they get back into the game, but we immediately crush them again. And so everything's just fallen apart for them. So all of that has to be borne in mind when you're discussing anything. But as you say, Jurgen Klopp's not one of the best managers in the world because he just copies what somebody else does. He looks at what other people do and say, right, what can I do with what I've got to make that work? And that's why Trent isn't the same as what they do with other players. It's why Robertson isn't the same as Ake. He's doing something slightly different to get the most out of what we've got. And if we're all being honest, it's taken him the best part of a season to get there, because he's not had a good season at the manager. He's not had a good season at
doesn't
all.
Doesn't even want a song sung at the minute.
No.
It's a solid level of self-loathing. Shut up and sing my name. But if only Craig Hannon has had the same attitude.
But that's the reality of where we're at. Is, you know, it is a sort of thing whereby he's not had a good season. It's taken him this long to get there, but he's not the sort of person that just goes, Guardiola does that, fine, I'll just do that then. He looks at it and goes, what can I do? So we're getting the best out of Robertson at the moment, getting the best out of Trent, and I'm glad you had the argument with yourself, Paul, because I leant forward to say the reality is that if you make Trent a midfielder, it means that those midfielders that he's, one of the midfielders he's replacing, can't occupy anyone. At the moment, they can occupy somebody, and that also creates space. So we're doing all of this to get the most out of everyone.
More on the space created, especially by Curtis Jones, in a second or two. Before then, here's this from Post-Match Pint.
If you think about it, just finish, like, is it 8th or 9th you've got to finish to not get your European football? Yeah, but the thing is, Mo, yeah, but then you can say to someone in the summer, you can say to your signs in the summer, listen, here's the plan for next year, and it's not fucking chase each other around fucking on a Thursday night against FC Carrierback. It's go out and win the league.
I'm 100% against it. I want us to be in Europe next season.
You right? Fancy a tie at FC Carrierback?
I would. I'd be bang up for it. I might actually get a ticket. The thing we don't realise is going from a Champions League budget to a no Europe budget is going to have a massive difference.
I'm not having fucking. I'm just not and willing. No, Mo, I'm not even willing look. To. Lads, I'm not willing to have fucking right. budget discussions with all the owners we've got. We've been in the Champions League for the last 150 years and we haven't spent a pound.
But that's why it matters. It shouldn't matter to us, but because we've got these guys.
They don't spend fucking money when we're in there anyway.
Yeah, but it matters to them, though, doesn't
right,
it?
Right.
And it's the reality.
Right. Our owners are fucking clowns, lad. They're right. fucking shite.
Yeah, and because of that, we have to take advantage and we have to be realistic of what they're actually going to be like. We can say we want them to do this, we want them to do that. We know they ain't.
How much budget difference do you reckon it's going to make if we're in the fucking Europa League? Imagine being in a Conference League.
Well, the difference between Europa League and nothing
is what? I'm not messing. I bet you it's not as even as much as you think it is.
If we're haggling over 15 to 30 million, then it's probably going to be actually a more difference than it should be. But anyway, the other thing is, right, look at the two teams in the Europa League this season, Man United and Arsenal. Where are they going to be next season? The Champions League. What else do you get from being in the Europa League? A chance to win it and get to the Champions League. Like, if we aren't going to be straight away as magic as we hope we are.
You get the Champions League, you win the league next season as well.
If we aren't going to be as magic as we hope we are next season, straight away, we're going to need all the avenues we can get to try and get back into the Champions League. And one of them is
our rebuild is a lot stronger if we say, right, we fucked up for the last 4 years and we haven't signed any midfielders. So now what we're going to do is we're going to sign enough midfielders to win the league. And then when you do that, you then next year go, okay, well, we didn't have to buy Champions League midfielders this year. So now, when we've won the league next year, we can buy Champions League midfielders then.
We're not going to buy a load of midfielders twice in two seasons. Yeah, you just exactly, said so how mad our owners
are. Exactly. So getting into the fucking Europa Conference League is not going to give us a bigger budget to do it then, is it? But it's going to give us 28,000 more games. Honestly, I just can't
It's not 28,000 more games.
It fucking feels like it when it's Thursday, Sunday, doesn't it?
It's literally two more games.
No, I mean, they're not being in anything at all.
Excellent stuff from Post-Match Pint. Thank you very much to Neil, Mo and Kev for enjoying that one last night at the Vines. Curtis Jones. Then Dan is nowhere near the normal place you get a Liverpool left-hand side of midfielder, certainly the last couple of seasons where, for instance, there'll been a lot of Thiago tucking in on the other way, playing relatively close to Fabinho. He plays a much higher role than that in his average position. He's even higher than Diogo Jota, which I think is interesting. That isn't the same necessarily as being creative, although he was at times. There's this idea of you get it to him higher up the pitch than he sometimes would be. He'll look after it nicely, he'll recycle it, and guess what? Liverpool have now all moved up the pitch and Leeds are now being pulled this way and that. And it's almost like hold-up play in a really odd way. It is a complete twist in terms of what we've been doing on the left of the three. But first and foremost, it just simply helps by virtue of the fact you're able to say he plays well.
I thought he was great. I'm really pleased that he's had the run of games that he's had because it's not really seen an awful lot of them over the course of the season. It's why I've found people really decrying them quite strange, because there's loads of midfielders that have not played that well that you could concentrate on if you wanted to. I find it strange that the one who hasn't really had a kick is the one that's taken an awful lot of ire. And I think that the run Lee's had, he's really grown into. So at Chelsea, I don't think anyone really played well at Chelsea, but he looked like the only one that could compete with the running of the Chelsea midfield, if that makes sense. I think the other two looked knackered in that game. Thought he played well against Arsenal, and then I thought he was great in this one. He played well as well in the European Cup game against Napoli when he started on the left of the front three, I think. When he was a youth player, he was a forward, wasn't he? He scored loads of goals for the youth team. Played off the left an awful lot and was great at it. And then I think because they knew they were losing Wijnaldum, I think a lot of the time he's asked to do a Wijnaldum impression, basically, when he plays for Liverpool. And I don't think he's that good at it. When they're basically just saying, listen, don't lose it. Don't play any more than a 10-yard pass. Give it to full-back. They're the more creative player, etc. That's the way the Liverpool midfield existed. So, you know, it's very reasonable to continue with that plan. But I don't think it necessarily suited the kind of player that he is and his skill set. And he still has to do that from time to time. And sometimes, like, it's fine. But he's not like as naturally as strong or as fit or got as much stamina as a player like Wijnaldum, I don't think. When he does the stuff higher up the pitch, I think you see the virtue of him. The playing around the box is really, really strong. I think he's good in small spaces. So, you know, there were a couple of moments last night where he's being pressed by like the Leeds right back and right-sided centre mid at the same time, and he buys himself half a yard and shifts the ball, and it's nothing spectacular, but it keeps Liverpool moving and it switches the play to the other side of the pitch or something like that. You know, not everybody that ever appears for Liverpool has to be like the solution to everything that might be going badly.
Not everyone has to play 10 out of 10.
Not everyone has to play 38 league games and 20 in the cups or whatever it may be if Liverpool get to all the finals. You can just have some players who are suited to playing in certain kinds of matches, who have a level of expertise in a role that might not cover every base, but that covers certain scenarios like this one, for example. There's not a player in the Liverpool squad that would have rather have played that position in that way. You know, Liverpool could have played, if he was fully fit, Thiago, and I'm sure Thiago would have been great, especially against a side that offered zero in midfield. But he would have been great in a different way.
I'd argue that he'd have been great 10 yards deeper, minimum.
Yeah,
or exactly. He wanted to be there. His instincts would have took him.
That's what
there.
I mean. He wouldn't have been as high up the pitch. He's never really been that kind of player, even when he played for Barcelona and Bayern Munich. It's useful to Liverpool to have very different kinds of players that can do different things. And it doesn't mean that they'll all be brilliant in every single context all the time. But I really think he showed his virtue. I thought he was great. Looked just really calm in possession all the time, never flustered by a tackle or anything like that, and just looked like an adult playing with Liverpool. If you were watching it, and someone said to you, "Oh, there's one of these players here who's quite a bit younger than some of the others, and who an awful lot of people just slate all the time," you wouldn't have picked him out, because you said he looks like everyone else. He looks just as comfortable. He looks just as confident in his own ability. And the manager likes him. The manager has started him against Manchester City before. He started him in plenty of European Cup games before. I think if he'd have maybe had a better fitness record this season, maybe he would have played quite a bit more. I'm not sure. You've seen the extent to which he's just decided that Elliot, for example, this season is his man, and he's played pretty much every game until this last little run when he got his own injury. So it doesn't mean that Liverpool suddenly need to sign zero midfielders or that everything's fixed in that department because one lad's had a decent run of three games. But it does mean that it doesn't have to be the sky is falling down with every single individual, especially when they've not actually played that much and you've not seen them for various different reasons. I hope he takes a lot from it, and I hope he just continues to play. I really want him to play on Saturday again have a good game. He'll have an awful lot of the ball again. And unless something happens, either with an injury or with Liverpool not playing as well or whatever, or trying something different, I'd just like to see him get the majority of this run now to the end of the season, because he's doing an awful lot better than what's being done there for the majority of the campaign.
He's excellent for the third, Adam. It's a crucial goal. He shoves all the way across the pitch. It's worth saying that Liverpool I think Leeds are being happy to take a gamble on leaving Jota one-on-one in order to shift it, change it a little bit second half, and Liverpool go, great, we'll have a go at that. Let's see how that goes for you. But part of that means literally leaving him one-on-one and sort of vacating the space. And it's interesting, Jones pops up on that right-hand side to play what is an excellent ball across for Jota. It's arguably the key moment of the game because it calms Liverpool back down. It asserts between him and Jota. It's an excellent finish from Jota, who, let's remember, gets himself a brace over the course of the game. And goals do change players. But I feel as though, it's another good Curtis Jones performance, possibly even a great Curtis Jones performance. And as Dan's arguing, they should just all be built on.
Yeah. And I think too many people expect too much of too many players, just generally across the board. And I think when the team is not functioning, as it clearly has not been functioning very well this season, that then means that players are expected to do even better than they were before, or blamed even more than they should be. I got told on the Twitter that he has had a dreadful 18 months. I was like, well, have you been sneaking into training? Because he's barely played for 18 months. How do you know he's had a dreadful, like, what an insane thing to decide a player has had a dreadful 18 months. Because the times he has played have been in fits and starts. So he's not had any sort of rhythm, not had any sort of time to get into the game. He's still only young, which everybody seems to forget. Everybody acts like he's 45. Like, he's still young. And he's now played three games in a row, two of them well, one of them very well. That's really good for what is a squad player. That's really good. And the ball for that third is inch perfect. I mean, it's inch perfect. Like, it just doesn't, Jota doesn't really need to do anything special with it whatsoever, because it's absolutely laid on a plate for him. It's just, yeah, I don't know. I don't understand why people are so angry that he's not Steven Gerrard, basically. And I dread to think what they'd have thought of the early performances of Steven Gerrard when he was having those back problems that he was having and was out with injury all the time and everything. Like, it's just, he doesn't need to be Pirlo. He just needs to be what he's doing, which is be a really, really good squad option.
I'm not sure, because I was questioning him a few weeks ago on a show with you, Neil, and I was saying at the time, if he's not getting a go now, when is he going to get a go? And it was only after that, it was a couple of weeks after that, it became more public what's been going on behind the scenes with his injury. And Joe, he said himself, like, I've got this weird injury where, like, I've got to rest every fourth day. And if that fourth day is like the day before or the day of a game, I just can't play the game. And I think the club's done him no favours in sort of keeping that quiet. I think we'd have all been better off knowing that that was going on, because if Joe, for me, and I really like Curtis Jones, and I think going back to Joe, the manager's had a bad season, and I'm glad more like people are reasonably accepting that without getting on his back. I think go back to the start of his season and the arguments inside his head, like he literally started doing them out loud. Do I need midfielders? Don't I need midfielders? I don't know. And I think if you said to him, reflecting on the season, what's one of the biggest problems you've had? He'd have said Curtis Jones. He just said, coming into this season, I love Curtis Jones. He's great. If I've got a fully fit Curtis Jones all season, I don't need to buy a new one, because he's, look at him, look how, and go back to this example we often use, which is, imagine if you'd bought that lad for 40 million and he plays that pass last night and has that performance.
Gutman said next to me in the match, and it's always worth it, like, Rob's often very sensible in the game, although I'm often mean, but he said to me in the match, if this was Gavin Birch's debut, everyone would be pairing.
Yeah,
everyone would be.
That's
pairing.
Exactly the point, isn't it? They with that pass, it would be on a showreel, wouldn't it? But the problem was, we've had another injury hit season with him, and it's been kept quiet for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Maybe not have known it until relatively recently. Maybe. That's the sort of the tone I
especially
got from it.
Especially being a weird injury as well.
Yeah, precisely. And I just think, like, I think everyone on the table probably agrees with what Dan was saying. I'd keep him in if he can. If he can stay fit and keep up these type of performances, he's an unbelievable squad player to have.
I want to talk about Jota with you, Paul. I think the same thing happened with Gakpo earlier this season, where I was thinking, God, I thought Gakpo would be a bit quicker, and then he scored. And there's a really funny thing that happens with Jota, where I've been thinking, oh, Jota looks like he might have just lost a little bit of pace, but worried about him post this injury. And then it isn't just even that he scores, it's that he sets up Salah for the one that makes it 2-0, and then he looked like he's gone up a bit here. And then he scores, and then you're like, he's gone up again. And it's not just my perception, I genuinely felt as though, it felt like the same thing with Gakpo earlier this season. It's not just this idea that goals change games, it's the idea that goals change players. And I think players who see themselves as forwards, I've had the same argument with Firmino in the past when the manager said, I'm all right with him not scoring. I've always felt a bit like, well, you might be Jürgen, but he's not. He wears number 9. He feels like part of my thing is I should stick the ball in the back of the net. Diogo Jota feels like I should be sticking the ball in the back of the net. And I just thought he was able to look like a bright, he's excellent for the third and fifth, don't get me wrong, but he's able to look like a brighter footballer off the back of the fact he's able to go, yeah, I'm contributing. Now, this is me contributing. I've set one up and I've scored two. I'm contributing to all of this now. And I thought it looked like it made a world of difference.
Yeah, but it's funny, isn't it? We literally have a saying like, oh, he's got a spring in his step.
Yeah.
Like, going back to what Adam said before, it's something's blowing my mind watching. Carragher did it again on telly last night, and Klopp's been doing it. People are like, it's just a puzzle as to why these footballers can sometimes be brilliant and sometimes not be. And I'm like, nobody thinking about psychology at all. No, like at the highest level of football, seemingly this is still a mystery to even the top managers. And I said it in an article the other week, it's no different to, you know, back in the era with Shankly and all them, and they were the greatest. They just didn't think about nutrition. It just wasn't a thing yet. And then one manager comes in and makes it a big deal, and all of a sudden everyone's got to do it. In the next few years, someone's going to get onto the fact that it shouldn't be optional for footballers to have sessions with a psychologist and to be able to talk through what's going on for them. Because this is a thing for elite sports at any level. I've always said about golf. I remember having an argument with one of our mates once about golfers, and it was like, you not don't think all of these lads can sink 10-foot putts every day of the week on the practice green. The problem is, like, for the last putt to win the Masters, it's in your head. Mm. You're just playing against yourself at this point. And you literally see that happen with footballers. It's not a mystery. He scores a goal and he gets that spring in his step again. And it goes back to what Adam said before. We've all experienced this in normal life. Sometimes you feel good, and when you feel good, you're physically better.
What's that interest in the footballers themselves know it. Salah went out of his way, and Salah's dead interest, I think, is a case study on this. After Jota scores, Salah's going out of his way to go, that was him. He won that and he played the pass to me. He was going out of his way to go, him, you, yeah, you did that. And Salah wants to win. He wants to win more than anything. He wants Diogo Jota to set him up 20 times a game so he can stick it into the back of the net more than anything. He wants to feel like he's contributing to a victorious Liverpool team. And it was as though he was just making a point of, you're really good.
Yeah.
You've been really good there. Does everyone know he was really good? And you see that, you've seen players do that for years, because players themselves know, I want this fella to feel better about himself, because if he does, we're all more likely to succeed.
Yeah, well, because he knows it happens to him as well, doesn't he? That's the thing. And he knows when that's happening to him, he needs someone to go to him. Your boss, you know. Remember how good you are. Remember you're faster than this. You can run faster than this. And all of a sudden his brain goes, oh yeah, I can't I? Because I'm happy again.
You get to see again from Gakpo. I thought, Dan, it's interesting, Gakpo's not I thought I'd check the numbers and I'd see he was involved all the time, and he wasn't really. But in my mind, so much of what was really good about Liverpool and really good about Liverpool in attacking moments went through him. You know, I felt like he'd had a ton of key moments on the ball, but he scores the opener and he suddenly looks 6'4" again. He suddenly looks unbelievably quick again. He suddenly looks endlessly involved again. Even if at times it is dummy run stuff, even if it's just a little clip ball here and there, a touch here and there, putting someone under pressure here and there. It's another good performance for Gakpo.
Yeah, it really was. I think the thing that I was most impressed by was just how calm he seems to always be. I mean, even his celebration for the goal, at first I thought he might have been offside because he just sort of stood in the net for a second. And then it was clear that he had scored. I just wasn't that fussed by it, apparently. But I was into that, and I thought it kind of bled through the rest of his performance as well. When he was on the ball, you know, the best example is the one that he shifts to the right for Salah. You know, any other player just hits a bit of a shit muddled shot, you know, the ball's under the feet, there's a couple of defenders in the way, probably gets blocked, maybe dribbles wide or something like that. But he had the perception of where Salah was from before the ball came in, knew exactly what he wanted to do, took his time, waited it perfectly, put it on a play for him. And I mean, again, that goalkeeper manages to make himself look tiny, somehow, despite the fact he's quite a tall lad.
Andy's just smiling to me. 6'5". We were talking about this in the car on the way back.
I'm staggered by it. I just refuse to believe it.
I've never seen a footy.
It's only 12.
It's like someone shooting with a shrink ray whenever anyone's in and around the penalty area in that case, then, because he looks so small in the goal. But the movement that Gakpo was doing as well, I think was part of the reason why you feel like he's always involved, even if he's not necessarily touched the ball. When they end up playing with essentially five attackers for a lot of the game, or certainly five people around the penalty area, if one is just always shifting the centre half by not even making a particularly complicated run, but by going left or going right, it means that there's an say Jones is on the ball. Well, Gakpo's taking him that way. That means the space is this way. There's two on that side. There can only be a maximum of two Leeds players there now. So I can shift it there and we'll do something from there. Thought he was really key in that regard. Something that I thought was interesting as well in terms of like the shape of the whole thing was when Diaz came on, he played on the right. And I know that, you know, Nunes came on and is more likely to do the left than Firmino, so maybe it just makes sense. But in terms of, we were talking about how, you know, Gakpo had a really important role because, yeah, the two midfielders are higher up and playing closer to him, but also because the starting position of the wide forwards is further wide. If Diaz is more likely to do the right-hand side now, first of all, I think it makes sense because if he's starting wider and he is very predominantly right-footed, Diaz, you know, everyone always talks about last season, he was always beat someone on the inside. I think he was just beating people on his right foot more than anything, and that's the side that his right foot's on. Then maybe he's able to do that a little bit more from that position if he's going to start from over there. And maybe it means that maybe there'll be more Salah down the middle from time to time as well, if they're going to want both of them on the pitch in certain situations. What I think the change of shape does by having two central players fairly close to the central attacker is it means you can do a lot more with it. I think pretty much every Liverpool forward can probably play down the middle. And depending on the opposition or the context of the game, maybe you're desperate for a win, or maybe a draw is fine in a certain away game or whatever, then you could do loads and loads of different things with whoever plays down the middle. And that's quite exciting because I think for the past few months, and part of it is injuries and players not being available, you've looked at it and been like, well, the attack picks itself really here. And there's not an awful lot of variety that you can do with it because it's just got to be, well, Salah has to play on the right and so on and so forth. That means someone's got to play down the middle, and that means you've only got one option left to the left. Firstly, Liverpool brought loads of forwards on. I was like, these are all good. Nice to see them. You're happy with all of these.
It was one of my favourite substitutions of the season. Although there was the split second when I thought he was just going to bring Milner on, because only Milner was ready, and I was like, come on, you, can we all like a laugh?
I was really pleased to see all of them, and they were all really pleased to get on the pitch. But I did think as well, I mean, obviously Firmino won't be there within only a few weeks now, but I did think I could just see all of them doing all of these roles somehow, and that's quite exciting. And I think Gakpo was a really good example of that because of how much he was doing to make everybody else better without necessarily being involved in, you know, X attack or Y counter.
The challenge to come then, it's 8 games, and, you know, even if Liverpool win all 8 of them, they might not, you know, still qualify for the Champions League, but it is also the idea of one game at a time. Adam, I am about to obviously completely contradict myself, because it is fair to say that this season in the Premier League, if we want to do the cliche that there are no easy games, because there aren't, you know, this is football at the highest level, there are no easy games. But there are games that are easier than others, and there are games that therefore can be ranked and quantified as the easiest ones. And Nottingham Forest at home, and Southampton at home, and I've done preparation for the report later on, so I've looked into this, very much quantify themselves as the easiest two games any side can have over the course of the season. But it sort of, it's a prelude for quite a big week. There's then the game against West Ham, there's then Tottenham, then Fulham comes thick and fast. You know, the games, there is a bit of a run here where Liverpool are play, so they've had the time on the training ground, they've got a bit more of it. All I want to say is, at this point, and we'll get excited for the weekend as we get closer to it, I'm looking forward to seeing them at Anfield doing some of this sort of stuff against a side like Forest. And Forest did beat us earlier in the season. I know all the caveats if you're listening, I get it all. But some games do have to be said are more straightforward than others. But we should be looking upwards, not downwards. We should be looking upwards as much as humanly possible, because if you can't look upwards off the back of winning 6-1 away from home, I'm not even allowing the goal glut nonsense. Do not make a mess of this again, Liverpool, after having scored a number of goals. And if you score a number of goals against Forest, that doesn't get you off the hook against West Ham either. Mm. There's got to be a serious looking up, trying to feel good about it, trying to build momentum, if nothing else, for the idea to start next season with Paul Cope springing your step.
If Liverpool had been playing as we have in the majority of seasons under Jurgen Klopp, and we were in a title race right now, we'd be looking at that run in and going, where are we dropping points? That's what we'd be looking at, because there's no game there where you go, that's going to be a really tough game. Spurs is probably the toughest, and I think they're a bag of shit this season.
I think West Ham's the toughest.
Okay, fair. But I think in previous times, you know, yeah, but West Ham, we've battered them loads of times at that weird Olympic stadium thing now. So yes, you're right, but also no, because we've battered them loads there. So there's no game where you're looking and going, oh shit, we've got City 3 games before the end, or Arsenal now, or United away, or, you know, we've got nothing like that.
Yeah, we've got something horrible at Goodison that you're thinking it's going to be a
really sticky game.
Yeah.
There's none of them. Now, unfortunately, this isn't like the other seasons under Jurgen Klopp, and we've dropped points against absolute tosh, including the next opponents in Forest. So we can't look at it like that and be blasé, but they absolutely should be looking up and saying, if we win 9 games in a row, we might still not get in the top four. Well, them's the breaks, but at least we're in a good vein of form for the start of the following season. And that's what's happened every time we've done a title challenge, is we've been in good form at the end of the previous season going into the next one. But the goal glut thing's really interesting, because I was thinking, oh God, we don't want another one of them. But actually, if you say we've done it sort of 3 times this season, where we battered Rangers, battered Bournemouth, and battered Manchester United. Well, the Rangers one, we followed that up with a win against, I think it was Man City.
Man City it was, yeah.
The Bournemouth one, we followed that up with a win against Newcastle. So the only one where we haven't followed it up with a win is the United one, where we lost to Bournemouth, but that was away from home. So the other ones where we played at home the following game, we've won it. So there's no reason why the fact we've scored loads of goals now should make us all go, oh no, we've run out of goals for the next game. Like, obviously that's not the way it works. We don't work on a quota. Like, it's fine. We can just go and batter Forest. And I think Forest about the same level as Leeds, so it might be one
away from home versus Leeds at home. Yeah, arguably worse. It's so poor.
Get an early goal, or even just be calm and sensible and don't do anything stupid, and there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to batter them, really. And I think there's an interesting one. I've mentioned this before, but I'm in a WhatsApp group with a United supporter, a Leeds supporter, and a Leicester fan. And we've obviously battered United at home, battered Leeds now, when we've got Leicester to come. So we'll probably score 8 against them, because that'll just sort of fit in nicely with what's going on. The other lad's a Charlton supporter, and they lost 6-0 at the weekend. So he's irrelevant to my WhatsApp group. But I'm not worried about Forest, as long as we don't do anything stupid. But the thing I've been most pleased with the last 2 games is there have been moments where we could have lost our heads, because we have at other times. Something's gone against us and we've lost our heads a little bit. Didn't lose our heads against Arsenal when they went 2-0 up. Didn't lose our heads when Leeds got back into it. I agree with you. Yes, we had a goal cushion, but there's there has been times this season where we've been in a comfortable position.
Well, it wasn't a terrible 10 after it went 2-1. It wasn't
God. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they're the things that I'm most pleased with. So I'm relatively confident going into the Forest game, all with the caveats of we've been god-awful at times this season.
It's a matter of managing emotions, Paul, and managing those moments. But I think also just getting the players enjoying it. One of the things I most enjoyed about Trent Alexander-Arnold's performance was he looked like he was having a ball. And I think having them try, for me, at times this season, even when they've won certain games, they've just felt like, God, this is graft. I'm really having to toil here in amongst this. Liverpool didn't toil yesterday against Leeds, and it isn't just the goals. It felt to me like they suddenly looked a little bit like they were enjoying the work. And I think if the manager can keep them in that headspace for this run to come, then they can do well. It's not all going to go the way all the time, but you would think Forest at home is one where it can go the way and they can keep enjoying it.
Yeah, well, that thing, I think we probably all saw it as it happened and weren't surprised at all when Klopp referenced it as his favourite part of the game in the 92nd minute when four lads were bullying a poor Leeds lad, as Klopp referenced him. But I think that comes back to loads of stuff we've talked about, from what Dan was saying before. Like, you're playing really well and then a substitution goes up and you look over and go, these lads are good, aren't they? Like, and the reality is, it is funny as you're getting older as a footy fan, isn't it, watching... Probably, I don't want to disparage everybody of an age group, but like when you're younger, you do tend to ride the highs and lows of football a lot more and everything's dramatic and all that. And when you're seeing all this online, all of a sudden after that performance, we're looking at it going, we're not that far away though, are we? Like, we might have made a balls up of sorting out midfield, but we've done a pretty good job of sorting out this attack, haven't we? When we had the best front three in the world to sort out to replace. Well, when they're all fit, Jesus, who's got a better forward line than us in the league? So I think all of those feelings going in, the form of Trent, the form of Mo, these lads coming back, Jota scored, Diaz is back, Nunes got his goal. If you're not going into that Forest game bouncing and wanting to do it again, you know, put a load of goals past them and keep that role going, there's something not right. And I do expect this to be a turning point now. Like that, those last, I think, as I said before, you know, taking the knock against Arsenal, coming back, conceding that goal against Leeds and continuing forward, I think there has been a little turn here that we can keep going.
Big nine.
I'm still not having the big nine.
The big nine.
I enjoyed, you've been saying they're calling it the big nine.
They are calling it the big nine.
On the streets.
They are. It's coming up on the streets.
Well, it implies to me that you're standing on your street corner in the middle of the night and shouting it at anyone who
hears. It's on the corners. It's on the corners in the bars. Waterloo area. It's in the bars. It's on the corners and in the bars.
But you know what? I don't care about the big nine, but in a really positive way. I'm not...
You want the big enjoy yourself?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to going to the match on Saturday. And that's like the first time in a fair while, I would say. Aside from like the social stuff and everything, which I've still enjoyed across the course of the season, I'm actually looking forward to watching Liverpool play. And the main reason for that is because they look like they enjoyed themselves in the past game and a half, or slightly more than that anyway, against Arsenal. And that makes you feel better about going and about enjoying it. I don't really care about the points or anything because it's probably too late anyway. And even if it's not, then, you know, fine, but there's no point stressing about it. I care more about loads of good Liverpool players. Quite a few of them are back that we haven't seen in a while. They're doing something new and exciting, and it's gone well for a short little burst, and I'm hoping that it lasts as long as possible, but more than anything, that we just get to enjoy it.
Thanks to Dan, thanks to Paul, thanks to Adam in the background, looking after the cameras for the YouTube. We've got Ash, thank you very much to him, and Andy Heaton for producing all the sounds that you've heard all the way through this podcast. Liverpool, keep enjoying yourselves, keep arriving. Sports Social Podcast Network.